This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, was there a reason Phoenix was chosen for President Trump to make a fiery campaign-type speech at a rally there last night? Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs was there, and he joins me in just a moment. Also, one Christian organization is fighting back against the Southern Poverty Law Center in court. Dr. Frank Wright, the executive director and CEO of D. James Kennedy Ministries, is here later to explain. And parents of kindergartners are enraged that their children were taught about transgenderism. Karen England with the Capital Resource Institute has more here on Washington Watch just a bit later. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more about today's topics and our guests. Also information there regarding our upcoming tour to of Israel. That trip coming up first part of 2018 in April. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Also information about the upcoming Values Voter Summit. We're going to be talking more about that in the coming weeks. You will not want to miss that event coming up in October. All right, President Trump addressed a packed arena in Phoenix, Arizona last night, where he held a campaign-style rally, and he fired up the crowd. Joining us now is Congressman Andy Biggs. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Arizona. He is a member of the House Judiciary, Science, Space, and Technology Committees, and is the chairman of the Environment Subcommittee. And he was there last night to greet the president at the airport when he arrived, and he joins us now. Welcome back to Washington Watch, Andy.
Thanks, Tony. Good to be with you.
So describe the rally for us last night.
Well, you hit it right. It was energetic. It was lively. It was loud. It was dynamic. I think that President Trump was trying to hit all the right notes, and I think we had Aretha King, we had Franklin Graham, we had Ben Carson, all there speaking, along with the vice president and the president. It was a great rally.
Was there symbolism in choosing Phoenix as the site for this rally? I mean, the president's had a rough week and a half and a pretty fiery rally. Is he rising from the ashes to take charge again with a new wave to push his agenda through Washington?
Well, yeah, it's a perfect place for him to come back to because his first real campaign event was in Phoenix when he started out his campaign, a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, whenever that was. But it was right here where he really got going on his campaign. He's got a strong base of support, people who understand what he's talking about with regard to his agenda. And then it's also, Arizona's been ground zero for the immigration issue for
right.
at least 15 years.
And he talked about that last night. He talked about the border and about building the wall.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was down in Yuma, which is a border town. And he said last night, and he was right on this, these people want a fence. It's imperative that we have a fence. It's a national security issue. And I've been down to the border many times, and that's the way the folks feel.
So let's talk about the realities of that. The president falling one vote short of being able to repeal Obamacare, a major campaign commitment, not just of the president, but of the Republicans as a whole. And he made very clear last night that he fell one vote short of that repeal. And he didn't mention any names, but I think the message was pretty clear that it was one of the senators there from Arizona that was not helpful.
Yes, he was. President Trump has a very prickly relationship with both of the Arizona senators. But I think the bigger issue than that is quite frankly, and he touched on this last night too, Tony, that 60-vote filibuster rule must go. We are underrepresented as having, even though we have a majority of Republican senators, we are underrepresented because those eight Democrat votes. You have to always get the 60. Those 8 Democrat votes basically control everything in the Senate, which means that it isn't just on the Obamacare issue that we had trouble getting stuff through. We're going to have trouble getting anything through on this agenda as long as you have to get a supermajority out of the Senate.
Right. Well, let's talk about the funding for the border wall. Now, some of that was in one of the appropriations bills that just went through. When you return, there's a number of appropriations bills that are going to have to be addressed. Is your sense that the president is going to have the support of Republicans to get a lot of these agenda items through?
Well, I think in the House, the answer is yes. The sense I get is people understand the president's agenda. We all ran on agendas very similar to that same agenda. There's this sense that we want this president to be successful. It's still there. And there's also a sense that, hey, you know what? If we don't deliver on these things, we're going to have real problems in 2018, because you can't go back to the American people and say, see, we asked for the House, the Senate, and the president, and we didn't deliver, but doggone it, give us another chance.
Absolutely.
Because then, then what you're talking about is you're not just saying, we can do this from a positive point of view. What you're saying is, you know what? We may not have got everything done, but at least we're better than the Democrats. That's not a good campaign speech, I can tell you that.
No, and it doesn't sell. And I think what's going to have to happen here is some of the Republicans are going to have to put a little pressure on their colleagues to the Obamacare, in my view, was there were no excuses not to pass that, because the Senate passed the 2015 reconciliation, which was a clean, basically what we call a clean repeal of Obamacare, not in totality, but it was as close as we could get. They voted that then. There was no excuse, in my opinion. And I think, justifiably, how can you say I voted for it 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, but I'm not going to vote for it now?
Well, I agree with you 100%. I was not upset so much about that skinny budget vote. I was much more upset over the failure to pass the 2015 clean repeal that 6 people voted for in 2015 and voted against this time. That's what I'm upset about, because that now that we can deliver, now that we have someone who will sign it, you can't vote on that. That did not make sense to me. That was what the promise was,
yeah.
And we didn't keep the promise. And it's frankly agitating, but it's also heartbreaking at the same time.
And I absolutely agree with you that voters are going to take that into consideration, and there's only so much patience that they're going to have with Republicans, as you pointed out. Gave them control of the House based on this, gave them control of the Senate based on this, and in large part, the White House based on it. And it was not done. So I think there needs to be a redoubling of the efforts here, and I know that there are some work going on in the Senate to try to get a repeal-type bill through. So a lot waiting for you when you get back to Washington. I want to ask you quickly about the media, the president in campaign mode last night. It sure sounded like candidate Trump going after the media. And how did the crowd respond to that when he started talking about the crooked media?
Oh, my goodness. There were 2 times that they were very, very extraordinarily loud. The first one was about Sheriff Joe Arpaio, and the second one was when he went after the media, and the crowd responded in a very negative toward the what I call the radicalized media, and very positive toward the message President Trump was making. And President Trump would clarify. He said, look, you know, not everybody is this way in the media, but there are a few, and I call those few the radicalized media. And we know who they are. They're the CNNs of the world. They're the Washington Post. They're the New York Times. There's a lot of great people in the media, but those particular outlets have an agenda, and they're going to go forward on that agenda.
Well,
he laid it out pretty clear.
They used to have that agenda somewhat veiled. No longer. It is blatant. It is out there. In fact, I was talking about that with Terry Jeffries of CNS News earlier this week. And the more they attack the president, the media, that is, the more his support solidifies. because I think the vast majority of thinking Americans see the blatant bias in our nation's mainstream media.
No, you're exactly right, Tony. But because think of it, there's very few institutions in this society that people loathe more than the U.S. Congress. Well, journalism has fallen into that category now because you can't trust them. You can't trust them. And they're no longer the fourth estate. They're no longer an impartial arbiter out there. If they ever were, I mean, they're go back in our history, you find very radicalized media from time to time. But you're right. They used to be veiled. And you used to feel like you get at least a chance at a fair shake. And there are places where I feel that way now. There are other places where I say, talking to you is like, it would just be very bad for me because you're not going to give me a fair shake. And that's what President Trump's talking about.
Yeah.
And that resonates. That resonates with the American people because they know it's true.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Congressman Andy Biggs, thanks so much for taking time out to join us this afternoon. Great to talk with you. Look forward to seeing you back in D.C. real soon.
Thanks, Tony. Hope to see you soon.
All right, take care, Andy. Andy Biggs, congressman from Arizona. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. A solid conservative member of the House of Representatives. Hey, by the way, I got a few minutes here. I want to play you some clips from last night to give you a sense of, if you didn't catch it, some of the things the president has to say, and I'll have some thoughts on this. So let's roll that clip, the clips from last night.
The only people giving a platform to these hate groups is the media itself and the fake news. If you want to discover the source of the division in our country, look no further than the fake news and the crooked media, which would rather get ratings and clicks than tell the truth. And I spoke out forcefully against hatred, bigotry, and violence. But the very dishonest media, those people right up there with all the cameras. But Sheriff Joe can feel good. If we have to close down our government, we're building that wall. So I think we'll end up probably terminating NAFTA at some point. And we are building a wall on the southern border, which is absolutely necessary. I don't believe that any president has accomplished as much as this president in the first 6 or 7 months. I really don't believe. We were just one vote away from victory after 7 years of everybody proclaiming repeal and replace. One vote away. One vote.
The president having a very lively rally there in Phoenix last night. We'll talk more about that a bit later. I understand his frustration with the media. As I was talking with Congressman Biggs, I've seen a transition take place in the media. And, you kind of, what's the point of even talking to them? All right, coming up next, the Southern Poverty Law Center, a hate group from the left. Kind of an attack organization trying to marginalize and silence Christian groups. Well, one group is fighting back in court. We're going to talk with Dr. Frank Wright on the other side of the break. Don't go away.
With a Republican president in office, we should be confident that our religious liberties are secure, right? We'll think again. As violations of religious liberty continue to occur in our military, FRC recognized the need to account for anti-religious actions taken by armed forces and the Veterans Administration. In just one recent example, the West Point's football team incurred the wrath of the anti-religious left when they prayed after a win, even though the prayer was completely voluntary and supported by the players themselves. Unfortunately, this situation is one of the many similar incidents in recent years. Only time will tell how the Trump administration will deal with attacks against religious liberty. Learn more about how our men and women in uniform are encountering difficulty in expressing their faith. Go to frc.org/danger for real stories of how our military service members are fighting for the very rights that thousands of their predecessors fought and died for on the battlefield.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Children often resemble their parents, but it's more than just inherited DNA that makes them look similar in the eyes of others. It's also their behavior, little mannerisms they pick up at home. And it's one of the reasons adopted children often appear to resemble their adoptive parents. And you know what? The same thing happens to you if, through Christ, you have been adopted into the family of God. 2 Corinthians 3:18 tells us that we, as we contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into His image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. In other words, the more you look at Christ, the more you start to look like Christ. Get Anchor devotional delivered in print at getanchor.com.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, the Southern Poverty Law Center, we talk about a lot about them on here because they're such a bad organization, and they've managed to be able to portray themselves as this arbiter of what happens out in the public realm, when in fact they are a leftist activist organization that likes to label and tag their opponents with the label of hate group in order to silence them by marginalizing them. Well, They've now been going systematically after Christian organizations based upon their view of marriage and human sexuality. Well, one organization is now fighting back in court. D. James Kennedy Ministries filed a lawsuit this week against the Southern Poverty Law Center. With us now is Dr. Frank Wright. He is the executive director and CEO of the ministry. Longtime friend. Dr. Wright, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Reverend Perkins. And if you call me Dr. Wright anymore, I'm going to be offended, Tony.
Well, Frank, great to have you on. And longtime leader in the conservative and in the Christian arena, formerly with the National Religious Broadcasters. But you're back home where you were many years ago with D. James Kennedy Ministries. And I didn't realize that the Southern Poverty Law Center had labeled your organization as a hate group, and puzzled by that because of the work that you do primarily in broadcasting the ministry, the messages of Dr. Kennedy, and keeping those biblically based messages alive.
Well, we've been on their hate map for about 10 years now, and it originally arose from our position on the biblical view of human sexuality and the biblical view of marriage. And so we're labeled on their map as an anti-LGBT group. And of course, we're not anti anything. We're just subscribing to the teachings of the historic Christian faith and a Judeo-Christian tradition that goes back 3,500 years or more. And yet, the Southern Poverty Law Center labels us a hate group because, as you said in your introduction, it's a convenient rhetorical tactic to try to silence your opponents by putting them on the defensive. And if we lived in a world where journalists would do their job, no one would buy the Southern Poverty Law Center's definition of hate. It's capricious, it's arbitrary, and it's infuriating to see ourselves, and you too, and our other friends at the American Family Association, being labeled and grouped together with legitimate hate groups like the skinheads and the neo-Nazis and the KKK. And that very collection of misaligned grouping reveals what you just said a moment ago. They really are today nothing more than a left-wing attack machine funded by untold millions of dollars of direct mail revenue. I think I heard you say, Tony, recently in an interview that they have over $300 million in offshore bank accounts, $350 million of cash unused on their balance sheet. And they're just a group that has lost their way.
Well, the most blatant example of this, and this happened probably 5-6 years ago, I lose track of time, but in Minnesota, there was they push policy. They're not just, again, they're just not some arbiter sitting on the sidelines calling balls and strikes or, you know, fouls. They were advocating for this radical homosexual policy in a school district in Minnesota. Parents organized and pushed back, creating a parents' organization. Well, they were gaining ground, and SPLC couldn't counter their arguments. So what they did is they labeled that parents group a hate group to marginalize and silence them. So there is nothing that sounds remotely fair or equitable about being able to do that, but yet the media is giving them the means of doing that by giving them a platform. Now, your ministry has what I think a very good legal challenge going after them, because they have hurt you from a financial standpoint, which is the basis of seeking a court judicial remedy.
That's right, Tony. We actually have sued the Southern Poverty Law Center and two other defendants. The other two are GuideStar, which is the so-called charity watch organization that uses the SPLC's information as part of their description of charities that they monitor. And we also sued Amazon.com. Amazon, we sued for, not for defamation, we sued for discrimination under Title II of the Civil Rights Act. Amazon offers a program they call Amazon Smile, and all you have to do to qualify for that is to be chartered by the Internal Revenue Service under what's called Section 501c3 of the Internal Revenue Code, meaning you're a nonprofit organization and donations to that organization are tax deductible. So they offered this to everybody except us, as it turns out. We applied to the Amazon Smile program, and they turned us down, and they said the reason was you don't meet our qualification based on the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate map criteria. And so we're suing Amazon, not because we don't like our friends at Amazon. We're suing them because this is prima facie discrimination. You're offering this to everybody else, and you're not letting us participate simply because of our religious beliefs. And if you remember, Title II of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 speaks about not denying anyone their civil rights, and one of the criteria is religion. So we believe they're discriminating based on religion. We filed suit against them for that on that basis. GuideStar, they're just using the Southern Poverty Law Center's information, but they have defamed us also by and you too, by labeling you on there when they put the little red star of disgrace on their website, identifying groups labeled by the SPLC as hate groups. And the Southern Poverty Law Center is at the heart of all this, though. So we have sued them for defamation, what's in Alabama, under Alabama law, what's called libel per se. In other words, you don't have to prove actual damages. You just have to show that their willful disregard or reckless disregard for the truth was so egregious that they can be punished for it. So
that shouldn't be hard to do. Frank, we're up against a break. We're going to track this closely and have you back on as it develops further. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Folks, don't go away. We're back after this.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, it looks like the rally on Wall Street may be ending here. It looks like everybody is waiting, and very subdued are the investors as they turn their attention back to Jackson Hole. And this would include global markets as well, because there's a lot of global members there at Jackson Hole of central banks. Central banker Mario Draghi will be there. There's some Asia representatives. So everybody is on hold right now, thinking that there is going to be some monumental fiscal policy and monetary policy that's going to come out of Jackson Hole. Well, I don't think that is the case at all. And I think if markets are subdued, it has little or nothing to do with Jackson Hole. I happen to know that the traders on Wall Street, even in this environment today, are a lot smarter than some of the financial news networks are giving them credit for. And I really find it hard to believe that whatever is going on in Jackson Hole and with the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank is having much of an influence on what traders are doing. So I really don't think that is the case. But nonetheless, we are seeing European stocks taking a bit of a downturn, but that is on factory orders, and factory orders have slowed down dramatically since last month. So there is some concern there and a whole lot of concern about what's going on in the third largest economy in the Eurozone, and that is Italy.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. And just to kind of, you know, the birds of a feather flock together, well, actor George Clooney donated $1 million this week to the Southern Poverty Law Center, so that should tell you something. All right, parents, listen up. Listen up. You don't want to miss this next story. You may find it hard to believe, but you need to hear this because it could be coming to a classroom near you. At the end of last year, a student who was a boy transitioned publicly in front of his class at the Rockland Academy in Rockland, California, near Sacramento. Now, are you ready for this? It was a kindergarten class. Now, kindergartners were informed that his name would be changing from a boy's name to a girl's name. This is 5 and 6 year old kids, okay? This is what we're talking about. This was in the classroom, the teacher kind of reading stories, promoting this whole thing. With us now is Karen England, Executive Director of the Capital Resource Institute. She's not only following this story, but was advocating on behalf of many troubled parents in the school district, and she joins us now. Karen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thank you, and thank you for having me on such a critical and sad issue.
Now, all right, correct me. Did I get any of that wrong? Is that what happened?
No, you got it right. I think something that was omitted was that when this all took place and the boy became a girl, that the parents had prearranged with the school and the teacher to actually read two books about changing your gender and coming out on the same day that all this took place. So these kids, these five-year-olds who aren't even thinking about transgenderism, were actually read the book I Am Jazz and then read a crayon story that says, you know, I'm a red crayon, but I really am blue. They mislabeled me when they put me in the box. Basically promoting you can pick your gender just like a crayon is a different color.
This is crazy. We would, kindergartners mm-hmm. being able to choose their sex, their gender, I mean, this is insane. And this is what caught my attention here, other than that you were a part of this, but the fact that the parents said their children came home terrified. One parent saying her little girl was terrified that she might change into a boy. I mean, this is traumatizing of these kids.
It absolutely is, and it's gone even further. So that particular mom, who has been very courageous in this and has had the ability to pull her kids out of school, she's got two daughters. And so this daughter came home crying and concerned one of them or she was going to turn into a boy. And again, it's two girls. Their family's made up of two girls and was horrified that maybe I'm a boy or maybe my sister's going to become a boy. That kind of conversation is happening throughout the school district. There was another parent who came home and said, Mom, when he said he was she, I went and told him that God made him he. That's right, isn't it, Mommy? Now, as a parent of a five-year-old, how confusing is that to even deal with? Am I going to encourage my child to go back and, yes, speak God's truth and risk being considered and labeled a bully and have that in his student file that follows him throughout school? Or, you know, how do you handle that? Because this isn't something they should be having to handle.
Right. And that's, I think that was part of the parents' message to the school board. How did the district respond to the concerns of parents?
Well, Tony, as you know, just like they do nationwide, they're disingenuous. They throw out the word Title IX to intimidate parents and the public and the media and say, we had to do this, and we're trying to tell them, no, you don't, and that before you do anything like this controversial, we want a policy in place that says you must notify parents. Now, this is a charter school, and Tony, you know that charter schools are supposed to be a little bit different than the traditional public schools. And the parents chose this charter school because it was parent-friendly. There is parent notification when a G-rated movie is shown. There is parent permission slip sent home for the eclipse. But this all took place, and they're not even, they're directing parents to talk to their children to find out what happened in that classroom.
Incredible. And it's when it comes to this issue, it's like the parents have no voice in it, and the kids are going to be taught whatever the school district wants to do, or an activist teacher in this case. Now, what was the teacher's response to this? Because, as you said, the parents were not notified. The teacher just decided to do this in coordination with the parents of this particular child. What'd she have to say?
Well, she stood up at the meeting, and so she is now public, and her name is out. And she said that she was proud of her students. She is glad she did what she did in order to protect this student. And every person, with the exception of one, that spoke in favor of this teacher doing that was another teacher.
Wow.
Everyone Incredible. Else, with the exception of one, was a parent saying, hey, we want to know. We want to have these discussions with our children. We picked this charter school for that reason. And I think it's important for your listeners to know because, you know, 4 years ago is when the law in California changed, AB 1266. And everyone nationwide was saying, oh, that's just crazy California. Well, this is happening everywhere. Your listeners need to know this is not just crazy California. This is a very conservative charter school in Rockland, California. But this kind of activism is going on, and the threat to every different, you know, school district.
It is everywhere, without question. Karen, we're out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Talk to you again real soon. Folks, don't go away. We're going to talk more about this on the other side of this break.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep, as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels sang about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website twholyland.com for more information. twholyland.com. Or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
American Family Association has been in ministry for 40 years, and we're celebrating with a special anniversary edition of the AFA Journal.
Hi, I'm Randall Murphy, editor of the AFA Journal. American Family Association founder Don Wildman often says, Christians are called to faithfulness, not success. This edition of the AFA Journal highlights 40 believers who have answered that call.
Start your subscription today at afajournal.org.
Have you been looking for a way to serve others? Are you able to serve in a ministry without being paid? You and Friendships might be the perfect match. Friendships is currently taking applications for volunteers providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished, both here at home and around the world. Get more information at friendships.org or by calling 337-433-5022.
In America today, religious freedom, national borders, and even traditional gender roles are in peril. With all that's happening in our world, our nation is in desperate need of a return to conservative values. Hello, I'm Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association. One of the best ways we can make a difference is with our vote. That's why each year the American Family Association is a sponsor of the Values Voters Summit to help increase cultural engagement. This year's Values Voters Summit will be October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C. The growing list of confirmed speakers includes people you hear on AFR like Ed Battagliano and Tawny Perkins, as well as Michelle Bachman, George Barna, Gary Bauer, the Benham Brothers, and more. The Values Voters Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. To learn more and to register, you can visit valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. Again, on Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right. Some of this stuff is just unbelievable. Nothing is beyond the realm of possibilities today. I mean, think about this for a moment. Kids can't get an aspirin unless parents give permission. All of these things that are not politically, fall in the category of politically correct, you got to have parent permission. But when it comes to kids that either want to, in some cases, kids that are exposed to sex ed and the teaching of Planned Parenthood, and they want to go and ultimately get an abortion or something like that, the parents don't have to be notified. And then now this whole sex gender issue. Parents have no right to opt their kids out of this. And in some cases, the kids can declare their gender, and the school district can't inform the parents that the kids have changed their gender. I mean, it's insanity. This was, as Karen England said, this was happening in a conservative area, Rockland, California, in a charter school. Now, these parents, as she pointed out, pulled their kids out of the regular school districts, were a part of the creation of this charter school where they thought they had control over their children, what they were being exposed to, and this is what they were exposed to. Well, here's what I want to talk about, folks. Maybe some of you have experienced something similar to this. All right, maybe your kids, and don't think conservative areas of the country are beyond the reach of this. In fact, if you live in a conservative part of the country, you probably need to be more alert to this, because there is an effort by those that are pushing this agenda to come right into the heart of conservative areas and bring this about. Parents need to be informed, and they need to be involved. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Maybe you haven't seen it, maybe you have, but I'd like to know. Have you faced a situation where your children have been exposed to something like this and you've had to rethink your child's education? Maybe you've confronted it. If so, how? 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. This is one of the things I've been talked about frequently when I talk about, number one, being engaged in what your children are being exposed to in school. Know what they're bringing home. Look at their stuff. You know, as a Christian parent, all parents, but I'm speaking to you as a Christian parent, God has given you the responsibility to train up your child in the way that they should go. You look throughout Scripture, that responsibility is given to parents. Now, you can delegate the authority if you choose. Choose wisely, but you can choose to do that. You can delegate the authority to the local school district, private school, Christian school, charter school, but you still, before God, are responsible for what your children are taught. So you need to be engaged, informed, and if necessary, speaking out. Secondly, this is why we need more Christians running for public office, beginning with school boards. People think, oh, that can't make a difference. Look at where most of this stuff we've been talking about in the last year has been unfolding. In schools. They're going after your children with these agendas because they know if they can change the hearts and minds of these kids and confuse them as young as 5 years old. Folks, they've cut you off at the pass. You know, we've talked about this before, that the vast majority of children, in terms of evangelizing, are going to come to know Christ before the age of 12. Well, they're trying to create greater confusion in the minds of these kids. It's going to make it difficult even to reach them with the gospel. So this is one of the reasons we need Christian parents on school boards across the country. 866-372-7234. Let's go to North Carolina, where Carolyn is on the line. Carolyn, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi there. Thank you. I was just thinking of a couple of things that have come into play in my life and where I have seen my kids grow up a little bit ago here in North Carolina, and my bonus child now, who's much younger. And just thinking about the idea, like you were just talking about with kids coming to Christ, that also there are so many parents that I just don't think about the idea, and something we can share with liberal parents, that they just don't realize the idea that anything that our 12 and 13 and 14 year olds think might be a way of life is fairly ridiculous anyway. You know, like mm-hmm. all the different decisions we might make as 14-year-olds, what decisions did we ever make at that age that really were well thought out and wise?
Exactly.
And I know that a lot of times we don't, you know, the kids that age, when they start to make decisions, they think they know it all, of course, as we did. But we as parents just have to stand up a little bit more and remind them that they're still so young. I know some of the people that I've met in my lifetime who are living the homosexual lifestyle, and the majority of them decided that that's what they were when they were very young teenagers or into their early teenage years. And it just reminded me so many times in those conversations that, you know, anything that makes us a little crazy, as all those feelings do, we tend to take for gospel when we're 14 or 16.
Right.
And I think if parents looked at that more likely, you know, like all the other things we don't believe from our teenagers. I heard someone say one time, and it really opened my eyes, I mean, in a gentle way, that just because someone has a homosexual experience or a trans experience or whatever, you know, like just because they have the thoughts does not make them a homosexual.
That right, but that's the point. That's the point that they're trying to do. When you have, look, kids are going in puberty. They're, as you pointed out, lots of emotions, hormones, feelings, uncertainty. I mean, you question everything. But here's what is happening on the other side of this. They are trying to lock those kids into those feelings and maybe an experience, hopefully not, but oftentimes in today's world, they're pushed toward that. If they do, and all of a sudden, well, that's what I am. And in many jurisdictions now, like California, parents cannot get counseling for their child. In fact, in some areas, they're being told they can't tell their children they can't do that. Now, to your point, which I thought was a great point, Carolyn, at 14 years old, do we give them keys to cars? Absolutely not. We're not going to let 14-year-olds drive. I'm not even sure. I don't think we should let 16-year-old drive. Here's another thing. Most states have provisions. If a teenager wants to get a tattoo and they're under 18, they have to get their parents' permission because that tattoo could be with them for life. Well, what about changing your gender? That could be with you for a long time, too. But no, because that falls into that category of the politically correct protected area. Carolyn, you're absolutely right. And that's what people need to look at this. Take it aside from this politically charged issue of sex and put anything else in the blank. Would we allow a 14-year-old to decide that? The answer is, other than what they're going to take for lunch, probably not. Carolyn, thanks so much, Felicia. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Missouri where Kelly is on the line. Kelly, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. You know, I work in a school district, and right now we currently have a female student who is dressed like a male. It's just wildly popular. It's just accepted by the 490 students in the building, by the administration, some of the teachers. But I just wanted to say, as a Christian educator, and there are some of us out there, very hard to walk and teach in a secular world, but there are some of us out there, so please keep the faith with those who are Christian educators. We are doing our best. And even though we're told by the administration and the higher-ups not to do Christian-like things and to teach the Bible, that we still do it, and we do it because of the cause of Christ, and we will not deny his name, and that we don't agree with what's going on in the schools, and that we keep the name of Christ, and we will not deny his name. So keep the faith. There are some of us out there who are doing what's right by Christ's name, and we don't agree with this.
Thank you, Kelly, for the call, and thank you for what you do. I've said many times, I don't necessarily recommend that we put our kids in the public schools. I've called for Christians to go into our public schools as teachers, as administrators, and be there as light, because some, and I know many, and I've talked to many, and I know that many of these kids, I'm sure, Kelly, you could tell me story after story after story of when we see the breakdown in society and we look at the statistics, even here on this program, you see it up close and personal. You see the children that are coming from broken homes. You see the kids that, you know, don't know if anybody cares about them. And the fact that you could be a teacher in that setting and maybe have the opportunity to have such an impact on the life of in the life of one of these children, that could be transformative. So thank you for being bold and courageous and not denying Christ in that setting. Thank you for being there. And absolutely, folks, we need to pray for those Christians that are in the schools as teachers, as administrators. And again, we need school board members that will back up those Christian teachers who are there and defend their rights. They have rights. But often what happens when they're challenged, and you get these groups like the Freedom From Religion Foundation, they come in, they challenge a school district, and they tuck tail and they run, and they leave these teachers high and dry. So we need school districts and members of school boards that'll back up these teachers that are simply exercising their rights in a way that is God-honoring. So, Kelly, thanks so much for the call. And, again, thank you for what you do. Let's go to Virginia where Dave is on the line. Dave, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. I have two things to say. One of them is about parental rights, and the other one is about parental responsibility. First of all, there is a work that's being done to amend the U.S. Constitution to protect parental rights because we have an aggressive erosion of parental rights occurring in the U.S.
Right.
And that the Parental Rights Amendment is in the U.S. Senate right now. It's SJ Res 48, and it was introduced by Lindsey Graham. It's been there before, hasn't done very well, but if a lot of people get behind it, maybe it will. The next thing is parental responsibility, and we actually are bringing this whole thing onto ourselves because we have taken to do with our kids what the culture has told us to do with our children. I'm talking about Christians. We outsource our kids from the time that they're 10 weeks old now. We outsource them for everything, for care, for education, for entertainment. Even the spiritual part, we outsource that to the church. And we're doing hands-off, basically, as far as raising our children. The Bible says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And we're letting the culture train our children. And so we need to get back to doing what God has called us to do, given us a solemn responsibility to do, and that is to teach our children to walk with the Lord as we walk with the Lord. We need to walk with him in a perfect way so that they can come alongside us and say, yes, this is the way we'll walk in it. And if we, just one more thing, in Psalm 127, verse 1, it says, except the Lord build a house, they labor in vain to build it. Back in verse 3, it says, low children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. And the end result of training him or her is the last part of verse 5, where it says, they shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. We can actually train up our children not to be ashamed of the gospel of Christ, and to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world, and speak with the enemies in the gate. We can actually have a chance at turning this culture around with the future, which is our kids.
You're absolutely right, Dave. And the psalmist also said that children are like arrows in the quiver of a warrior. And the analogy there is that a warrior took very good care of those arrows, honing them so that they would go the greatest distance and they would hit their target. And I do believe that we need to raise up our children, and at the appropriate time, we release them into the heart of the culture to take truth and to prevail with that truth. Dave, I'm 100% with you. And I think parents need to very, very seriously think about the investment in the lives of their children. It's the time that you have children in the home, and I can speak to this from experience, it's a very short time when you look at the whole time frame of life. I cannot think of a better investment than investing in your children's spiritual health and their future by training them up correctly and protecting them from the culture. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much. Sorry I didn't get to all the calls. Obviously a topic that a lot of people want to talk about. We'll return to it again, I am sure. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.